Thanks for downloading the Future Radio 96.9 FM podcast. We're Norwich's community radio station, broadcasting full-time on 96.9 FM around Norwich. You can also listen to our online stream and find out loads of information on all the different shows we have to offer. Just go to futureradio.co.uk. Here comes a selection of some of our highlights from the last few days on Future Radio 96.9 FM.
Now it's time for our regular Tech Talk spot with Dominic Lukesh and Ross Patselt. Welcome back to the studio, guys.
Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Nice to see you. Now, Dominic, it has to be said, last week, your call from Barcelona was not an unbridled success because...
it wasn't. I thought it was great.
Well, only as much as we... It was good to speak to you from out there, but it was like you were talking probably from outer space or somewhere on the moon, and for some reason it reacted badly with my headphones. You could probably... Why that happened. And also, your task to find me a Spaniard. Dear, oh dear. Where was he from?
He, Kashmir, okay. Yes, yeah. So, yeah. He was the only local person in the cafe. It was, it was mid-morning in an internet cafe at the outskirts of Barcelona. What do you expect?
Oh, I did kind of drop that on you, didn't I? To be fair, yeah, I think you figured it very well. It was good fun. So, remind us, what were you doing out there?
Well, I was there at a conference. Well, first, I used to live in Barcelona about 10 years ago. I spent about five or six months there, working for a language school. But this time I was there for a conference about this open source software that I used to develop websites for people. And it was just a 4-day gathering of people from around the world who use this software and who contribute to the development of it and who kind of want to share the ways that they use this thing.
So it's all stuff for the future, or is it the kind of stuff that man in the street will be using?
Well,
soon?
It is stuff that man in the street is using quite soon. Is actually has been using for a while. The only problem is the man in the street and woman doesn't realize that they're using it, because that's the stuff that powers other people's websites. So, for instance, if you go to the mtv.co.uk website, you don't know that, but you're using Drupal. This is this open source website management. It's called Content Management System. And so, so Drupal is running that entire website.
Is that news to you, Ross? You're using Drupal?
That's just gone over my head. I've never even heard about that before.
Well, basically it is. What people don't realize is that there is no such thing as a web page anymore, right? They still exist, but they're very rare. When you go to a big site like Tesco's or Amazon or whatever, you never read a page. What you're actually doing, you're sending a request or database somewhere, and that sends in lots of data and assembles it in one place and shows it to you as a page. But there is no such thing as that page anywhere on the Amazon's computer. Or the same goes for the Future Radio website. There isn't a page. There is no such thing as a page. It's just a database. And when you click on a link, it's actually not a link to a page, it's a link to a request to the database, and it pulls out a lot of stuff and just shows it to you as a page. So that's kind of the new way, in the last 5 years that the websites have been going that direction, and in a few more years there will be no more websites of the old kind at all.
So this is open source.
Well, open source, okay, well, this is, let's talk about what open source is. Everybody knows about free software, right? You've downloaded lots of stuff for free. What is your favorite free software that you use?
iTunes,
okay.
Probably Google. Is that software?
Well, Google is a service. Okay, it's a free service.
I'd say stuff you
but they actually provide free software. For instance,
Facebook.
We talked about what to do with your
Real Player
is one. But a couple of weeks ago, we talked about what to do with your photos. And Google actually has this free software. It's called Picasa.
I use it.
Very good for software photo management. Now the problem with all of these that we just mentioned is that they're free, as in. And it's in the sort of open source community. People say it's free as in beer, as in something you don't have to pay for. Somebody gives you a free beer. Yeah, that means it's free. However, they're not free as in speech, as in the sense of in Spanish, you have two words. You have libre for free as in speech.
Yep.
And you have the other one, which I can't remember. Gratis, I think, which is free as
one.
In beer. Yes.
And I just using real real player to burn some discs recently, and you have quite an annoying film advert at the top now every time I open up real player.
Because they have to pay for it, they have to pay for it somehow. So they're giving this to you for free, but it's not the software. No, but they're the only ones. They're the only ones managing the software. They decide to start charging for it at any time they can. And they cannot charge for something they already gave to you for free, but for the new version, if they want to upgrade it, that happens occasionally, that these free players all of a sudden become commercial, or often they have a commercial bit that they that starts bugging you and it says, well, why don't you pay for these extra features and things like that, but they own the copyright. It's fully copyrighted. Nobody else owns that software. Some of them are completely free, and the person doing it is doing it just out of the goodness of their heart. Like, there's a really good viewer for photos called Earthenview that's now in version 4, but, it's been running for about 10 years, and this guy in Slovenia, I think, just creates and puts it out. Every few months, there's a new update to it.
So would that be on a par with a Picasa?
No, Picasa is for managing your album collection.
Okay.
Earthenview is for viewing photos of different formats and converting them and editing them and things like that. But the point of it is, if you wanted to make a change to that piece of software, the only person who owns the code is the person who wrote it. So it's free of freeware, but it's not open. And now there's this new, we're talking about free as beer. And now we have this free as speech.
Right.
Right. And free as speech means that not only do you publish this piece of software, but you also open up the code, the so-called source code. And that means that anybody who wants to see how you wrote that program can have a look at it. And if they want to make changes to it and publish it as, recompile it in a different way, then they can do that. And there are no restrictions on how they can use it for their personal use. But also many of these open source projects actually have a special kind of license that allows you to publish it in a way that you can use it for commercial purposes as well. And guess what? Lots of people, most of them at Microsoft don't like this. Steve Ballmer, one of the, I think the president of Microsoft, has made very disparaging remarks about open source software, saying, well, it will never be as good as the stuff that, that we spend millions of, hundreds of millions of dollars on development. But guess what? The internet would not be the way you know it if it wasn't for free and open source software. Half the websites, probably more websites, more than half the websites you go to, run on some sort of open source software. The server software that all the most of the internet is powered by is called Apache, and that runs all the servers. The database software that most of these websites are using is called MySQL, which is again free and open source. They write it in a bunch of programming languages. One of them is called PHP, Perl, Ruby on Rails. All of these are free and open source. Without it, you could not have the web.
Now, you were in Barcelona last week, and you did some recording, and we asked some different people some different questions. And I think we'll come to that, play a tune, come back to that.
All right.
And go out, I'll replace some XTC. This is Chain of Command. Future Radio, if you go to the Future Radio website, that's futureradio.co.uk, you can get the Future Radio podcast. If you've missed any of your favourite shows, fear not, you can now access podcasts of regular shows and features via our new podcasting services, which I believe, Dominic, you've had something to do with our podcast getting up on the website.
Well, at the moment, it's really in a very sort of a trial phase of the project. But at the moment, you can get a podcast of this segment, and that's on futureradio.co.uk/techtalk. And then also the platform program is regularly podcast. That's on futureradio.co.uk/platform. And then Roz has been putting up snippets of shows on another page, and that is... And we'll just make it available on futureradio.co.uk/podcasts.
Yeah, they're not updated really, really quickly.
Yes.
It takes a few days to update bits and bobs, but that's now actually on iTunes. If anyone wants to subscribe to it, you can go on iTunes. If you go in the search box, type in Future Radio 96.9 FM, that'll come up the first one.
When you say subscribe, is there any money to be paid for that?
Nope, completely free.
It's all free. Podcasting is usually free.
And I see it on, there's one or two of the sports bits and pieces on the Future Radio podcasting, including the Graham Pohl interview we did the other week. Now, Dominic, in Barcelona, you met some fairly sort of high-up people, didn't you?
This was a gathering of, we talk about open source, and open source usually works around a project. And there's a group of people who have a similar interest, and usually it's a group of hundreds and hundreds, sometimes thousands of people who have similar interests, and they contribute to this project. And, of course, this is best done if at once or twice a year you get together and have a sort of a conference. And this one in Barcelona was one of these conferences for this open source project I'm involved in that's called Drupal, and that's, you know, that's the this open source project for website development software. And I was lucky enough because, of course, all the leading lights of the Drupal community were there. And so I've talked to some of them, and I recorded a bunch of interviews. We're going to play a few snippets now. Yep. Then I will also put all the full interviews online eventually, but it's going to take me a bit of time to edit them so that they're presentable.
What software do you use to edit?
I use the free and open source software called Audacity, but I also use the unfree and unopen and very, very closed source software called Audition by Adobe. But Audacity, if anybody wants to edit audio, just to try it out, it's very simple. Go to audacity.sourceforge.net or just Google Audacity, and then you can get this free software that is also open source. So if you're a programmer, you can get the source code and add to it.
So let's play some of these clips you got from Barcelona. Who's the first one?
Okay, the first one is Dries Bertad, who's the founder of the project. He's a really amazing guy. He started this as his college dorm bulletin board system, and then it just kind of grew into this huge, you know, huge project that now MTV and Sony and Warner Brothers are relying on, and also, you know, and also The Onion, like the satirical newspaper online, and many others. So, and I just asked him a bunch of questions. You can hear the whole interview, but this is just him talking about what open source means to him.
Drupal is free software, so there is the values of the freedom of being able to access the code, to being able to make changes to the software, and, you know, being able to share and distribute your work with other people. So that's really important for me, not only as a user or as a project lead, but also as a user of other open source software, because it allows me to remain in control to some extent of the stuff I'm using.
So to give people some idea, I mean, he's a pretty important high-up person.
This is the leader. He's the one who ultimately makes decisions about how things happen in the community, even though the way decisions are made in the Drupal community are very much kind of democratic in many ways, but he is the one who has kind of a finger on the button, so if he decides not to push it, it doesn't get pushed. And he gave, you know, he's a kind of a young, soft-spoken guy, but when he speaks, people listen. He gave a really interesting talk about the state of Drupal, it's kind of the state of the union, and, you know, and it was definitely a very well received, and, you know, he had 400 people hanging on his every word.
I was thinking, Ross, listening to this, and what would happen now if computers didn't exist? So somebody came down and said, "I'm sorry, I'm taking away all the computers and all the software."
Well, I think the world would grind to a halt now, because we just rely on them for just about everything, don't we? We rely on them for shopping, we rely on them to do our banking with, we rely on them probably to sell your house, anything.
And
emails.
I'm surrounded by computers here, because gone are the days when we had two turntables and a cartridge machine.
Well, that's right. So, I mean, so many shops have closed down, so many shops have closed down since the internet. Yeah. So obviously they're gone forever. Yeah,
the academic world will change radically, because most of the it will be much more difficult to write and to, you know, to communicate about what you're doing, and it will just be a very different world. Even though we must remember, it's only about 15 years old. You know, 15 years ago, it wasn't that uncommon not to have a computer. Well, it was actually more common not to have a computer than to have a computer. I travel a lot in countries like Albania, and sometimes, you know, it's a shock when you come into a principal's office in a village school somewhere in Albania, and he doesn't have a computer on his desk. Oh. And even if he does, the electricity isn't on half the time. So, you know, know, I mean, so there are still parts of the world where computers are not particularly part of people's lives. But here, I don't think we could. We could do all that much.
African children have the £100 laptops now, don't they?
Yeah.
Yes, that's well, they, you know, you can't quite say African children have it, but they're going out there, and then hopefully they'll be spread out to more people.
But it's good it's going out to third world countries helping.
This is a great example, another example of an open source project, because the software that this One Laptop Per Child project uses is Linux, which is the operating system that is available for free and is also open source.
I'd be a bit upset, though, if I were somebody who'd perhaps done some software for, say, photography, uh-huh. and it was really good, and you could sell it for £40 a time, yeah. yet the big companies like Google uh-huh. can just give it to you for free. So a bit like certain supermarkets are taking over the world in the high streets, shut them down. Is that going to happen online? Because wasn't it this week that is it Microsoft that bought out Facebook?
Well, no, Microsoft is just they offered money for about, I think, 10% of the stock of Facebook. So they're nowhere near to buying it out, and it's still not a done deal. So, but this is a great, you know, this is exactly the right, you know, what you mentioned as something that you may be wondering, you know, as a programmer, why would you contribute to a project like that? And actually, if you play the fourth clip, then there's this one of the prominent programmers of the Drupal project who is a genius, talking about why he works for an open source project.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's really very rewarding, in part because I get to work on things I want to work on rather than things that I'm ordered to work on, which is how the working world works. It's also very rewarding because the project we're on doubles about every year to year and a half, and it's gratifying to see that kind of input. The community itself is very involved and constantly growing, and you see all kinds of people who get to use the product and tell stories about what they've done with the project and sometimes come in and help the project grow in great ways. We have a huge following of people who do different things and do stuff with the software people who started it never dreamed about.
So you did very well to get these people. Were there people queuing up or security guards next to them, or could you just swan up and get the interviews?
No. This guy is Earl Miles, who developed this particular plugin for Drupal, which makes... basically, it's going to revolutionize the way people design these websites. It's almost, you know, it's very powerful. And he gave a talk that received, in the middle of it, a standing ovation. You know, something
really?
You expect from Steve
wow.
Jobs. And I actually did ask him the question. You can hear the full interview. And I asked him the question, you know, you have this, you know, I mean, you have this star status. You know, why don't you go into, why don't you want to be Steve Jobs and be a multimillionaire? And, I mean, his answer is partially, there's only very few of people with this kind of talent can be multimillionaires. I mean, it depends on luck and lots of other things. But also, there are other rewards that he receives, because in many ways, being a programmer is almost like being an artist. And by the way, this guy, his online tag is Merlin of Chaos, and his website is called angrydonuts.com. And he's interested in creative writing, but also in sort of creative programming. So he gets a lot of interaction with from others. But also, the other point he made is that his software, his code is out there. So if somebody wants to hire a great programmer, they can, because they see his work right there. I mean, see, they don't need to rely on CVs, and they see his standing in the Drupal community, which is very high. And, you know, lo and behold, now he works for Sony. They snapped him up for like that.
Fantastic. Who else did you speak to?
Well, I also spoke to, that's the second track, is I spoke to Jeff Robbins, who is a former rock star, and I'm not that up on the rock scene, so I'm not sure how big a rock star he is, but he certainly was in the rock, and he introduced Drupal. He started a company called Lullabot, and they designed the website for MTV UK. They designed websites for Sony, who owns artists like Ozzy Osbourne, so he designed a website for Ozzy Osbourne using this free and open source software. And so I talked to him a little bit. He talks about what is in it for companies like Sony and Warner Brothers to use this kind of free open source software. So
let's hear what he's got to say.
People, as they use the software, they feel like, well, I didn't pay for it, so the least I can do is give back how I've added on to it, and that goes out there. And there are currently about 2,000 modules to add certain functionality like e-commerce or event management. So you can assemble these types of websites relatively quickly and relatively cheaply compared to the cost of proprietary content management software, especially of the type that MTV would want to be using. I mean, just the licensing fees are often in the millions, multi-millions of pounds a year. And so, you know, they can afford to have two or three people on staff who are working with the software, perhaps working with the Drupal community, and it really continues feeding on itself. And the work that MTV does in improving their stuff, if they contribute it back, then other companies like Sony, and, I mean, everyone from Greenpeace and Amnesty International are using this same software that that Sony, who has a reputation for not being as free and open, shall we say, is using. And so it's really this sort of groundswell effort that's really cool.
They were fairly sort of candid in their views, weren't they? There's no holding back.
Yes, well, I mean, as actually, again, in one of the interviews that will only be online, I talked to a guy who's a deputy vice president for a large media corporation, and he was talking about how he used Drupal to do something very quickly and very efficiently for his company that a multi-million dollar piece of software just cannot do. Mm. So there was this interesting sort of mantra that he presented, was talking about with projects like these, you should fail often, fail cheap, and fail quickly. And that way you get a lot of development, you know, a lot of work and a lot of progress that often you don't get when you try to buy a complete closed source solution. And so one of the things that he didn't, you know, Jeff didn't mention in this bit, but other people and he have talked elsewhere, is that you have this open source software and you need a special feature for your website. Well, you just add it. You don't have to you have to write a proposal for your company, and you'd have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to have this new feature developed. You just do it yourself and you contribute it back to your community. And you get credit for that as well, you know, a credit as in goodwill, and that's always good to have.
And this is the part of the program where we do the tech talk with Dominic Lukesh, and I bring my notes in on bits of paper and scribble them down. But you're such a techie that you actually put them onto your mobile phone and your little PDAs there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a phone. I wish I had something better than this. But what I do is I type them into my Outlook notes, and then it syncs nicely with the phone, so I don't have to. If I had to type them into the phone, I'd probably write them down just as you do, but I figure I'd save a bit of paper, and I lose paper anyway all the time, so it's better if it's in my computer, and it nicely synchronizes automatically with my phone, so I don't even need to worry about it.
Do you know what I use for my notes? I use a Scion.
I used to have a Scion. They were great. I wish I had to get rid of it because I bought a new laptop and didn't have a serial port anymore. So I decided I gave it to my brother. And I bought a new one, then I lost that one. So now I just have a phone.
They're good, but they were kind of the Betamax against the VHS version of the PDA, because you could link them up with Microsoft.
Yeah,
Word particularly.
It wasn't too bad. I mean, you could do a lot. I had a sailboat, and you could get all these sailing navigation programs for the Scion. They were really great. And tide tables. They were, you know, so they were good for that.
I could do with those. Now, doing all these wonderful interviews for us in Barcelona, Dom, what did you use to record them?
Yeah, well, just a little bit of self-serving congratulations there. Well, thank you, Tim. I used your little audio recorder called the Zoom H4, and it was amazing. I recorded a bunch of lectures, and I have about 4, 5, 6 hours of recordings, and I'm going to put them all online. And it was this, you know, it was just this little thing. It costs about £200, mm-hmm. So it's not cheap. And all it does is record, but it does a really, really good job.
Well, I bought it from America and one of the online sites in dollars, and it comes to about £140. So
that's not too bad.
But I did loads and loads of research, mm-hmm. and eventually bought this Zoom H4, and then wondered if I bought the right one.
I think you did. I mean, I was listening to a podcast I was telling you, mm-hmm. just on the way to the studio, and there were a couple of guys saying that it has the worst user interface on earth, which I agree with. It is really horrendous.
It's a bit plasticky.
It feels like a piece of junk. I mean, it is you know, just a little plastic box, really. But the microphone is really good. It, you can input XLR mics into it. It will do multi-track recordings. But for just recording lectures at a distance, recording interviews, it is very, very good. It does the job really well.
It's very sensitive, so it could almost literally, you could hear a butterfly's wings flapping. But if I gave it to, into somebody to talk to, there was sometimes wind, a bit of popping, a bit too sensitive. But when I use an external microphone in it, it only goes through one channel.
No. You can records multiple channels. You just have to set it up right.
All right.
I haven't done it myself, but it seems it shouldn't be that much of a problem.
You can show me that later. Okay, well, let's play another one of your clips from Barcelona.
This is from somebody from NASA.
Wow.
You know, the North American Space Agency.
Fantastic.
And he was, he used Drupal for a conference, to run a conference in a different way than usually do, is in a way that everybody presented their talks online before they gave them, and then they continued adding to them afterward the conference as well. So it's kind of a community building website. And what they did, they had some developers, some programmers on hand throughout the conference, and if somebody wanted the feature added, they added it right there and then. So, you know, so that's a really great advantage, another advantage of open source. And now, then I asked him, well, in his talk, he also gave a presentation, and in his presentation he said, well, the whole philosophy of open source goes really well with a government, like a taxpayer-sponsored project like NASA. And so this is his answer to that question.
NASA is a taxpayer-funded government agency, and so it really belongs to the people that pay for it, in my view. And when you build software, and it's part of an open source collaborative software development process, it belongs to everybody as well. And so I think that it makes much more sense, sort of philosophically as well as practically, to have software development engaged in and invested in by government agencies be owned by the people that pay for it in the first place. And that, therefore, I think means that you'll end up getting more software you need for less total long-term investment, because it'll be deployed across a broader range of end users in the public sector and, of course, also in the private sector, which is also important for NASA to catalyze the private sector as well to develop technologies and develop products which can in turn contribute to our economy in the United States.
How many people were at the conference?
This was the biggest Drupal conference so far, and it was 425 people. I was at the previous conference in Brussels last year, and there were only about 150, I think. So this was a really great increase. And there are two conferences a year, one in Europe and one in North America. So the next one, I think, is going to be either Canada or the U.S.
So would you go?
If somebody paid for me to go, I would go in a heartbeat. This one, I just basically paid for myself, just to go out and meet people.
Because I don't think, Ross, it's any kind of exaggeration to say that Dominic's a bit of a techie genius.
Just a bit.
But, so what I wanted to know is, when you get your idea from millions of pounds,
All right.
Can we have perhaps buy shares in whatever you decide to do?
Yes. Unfortunately, all of my ideas tend to go towards the open source. So, So although, you know, there are good ways of making money out of open source, as we heard from this guy Earl Miles, there are many companies that basically all they do is support open source projects. So the important thing again is to remember this is free as in speech, not free as in beer. So you think. So here we're talking about the politics of it. Should governments use open source, free and open source software? And the answer is yes. However, usually you would say, well, of course they should, because it saves money. They don't have to pay licenses to Microsoft. But that is not the reason. They still have to pay for support to somebody. You know, so Microsoft charges you all this money, but they provide support, and they sort of, they have a service level guarantees and things like that. So you still need a company out there that will provide that sort of service. The reason you should use open source is any modifications you make to the software, any improvements you make for your own use, you contribute back to the community, and therefore the taxpayers are getting the benefit of the government work. So I think government and education institutions should definitely use open source, not just because, and sometimes it might even cost a little more money than just paying Microsoft a bit for the license. But the advantage, the sort of moral and philosophical advantages of using that are just, you know, much greater than that of using commercially designed software.
Message has come through on the instant messenger on futureradio.co.uk. It's from Paul Newson. Thanks for your message, Paul. He says, Dominic, do websites generated with the Drupal CMS system produce valid markup to ensure maximum cross-browser compatibility with me so far? The homepage of Drupal's own website contains 13 errors according to the W3C's validator.
That is a good point. They generate as good a markup as any websites out there you will see. Unfortunately, there is in the web world, there is kind of a there are the purists, and the W3 organization that's the standard body, the standards body for the web. They have this service that they can check your websites to see if it generates valid code. And in general, you will not find websites out there that do. And there's a lot of compromises. So Drupal generates pretty darn good code. Actually, it's used by, it is well known for having, you know, for good coding standards. And, but it doesn't generate a completely pure markup because that would compromise some of the functionality. But Paul Newson is right that one of the things that Drupal could improve in, but it isn't a huge priority at the moment because I think it's doing a pretty good job.
Okay, thanks for that, Paul. That's really interesting. Any other messages and comments, always welcome. futureradio.co.uk or the word future to 666 and your message. I was thinking, we were talking earlier about supermarkets taking over the world and certain websites as well. If I asked Ross out of the blue here, to name three websites that you went on, I bet I've got them written down here. So give me just three off the top of your head. Three websites that you go on most days.
Right, most days, everyhit.com.
Okay, it's not one.
Because I'm a music geek.
Okay.
BBC.co.uk slash news. Always go on there. Okay. I'm surprising you, aren't I?
You are, yeah. But
and probably. Oh, on the spot.
So tell you the three I've written down.
Go on.
I've written eBay.
Oh, eBay, yeah.
Yeah.
eBay.
Google.
Yep.
And MySpace.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were talking earlier about if the internet just completely stopped, if you took everyone's computers away. Where would you sell your stuff? Because all the second-hand shops seem to be closing. They'd have to reopen them.
Yeah.
But does it worry you, though, that, Dob as well, that in a few years' time, possibly, the internet will just be sort of very, very choice-free. I mean, you just have the big companies, the Microsoft companies, eBay, Google, MySpace, Facebook, which are going to be owned by others anyway, and there'll be nothing left.
No, actually, I don't think that is going to happen, partly because of this open-source notion of the internet. Because, as I said, the internet runs on servers that run, you know, the internet would not exist without this free software. It runs on servers that use the Linux operating system, use the Apache server system, use the MySQL or PGSQL database, and then use a free and open source programming system. Actually, Google itself has a huge interest in open source, and they sponsor a lot of open source projects, including Drupal. They paid a couple hundred thousand dollars over the years to this thing they call the Summer of Code, where they pay young programmers to work on an open source project and add some functionality. And they themselves, because you know they have thousands and hundreds of thousands of servers, and they use their version of Linux. I mean, if they once decide to go evil, as they probably eventually will, but they haven't quite done it yet, then there will be somebody else who will have the option to take some of this open source stuff and start a new service. So I'm not too worried about it. The problem would be if the companies providing the wires, the cables that make the internet run, if they decided to limit what you can do on the internet. And that's why it's important to think about net neutrality so that somebody cannot say, well, we'll provide you internet, but you can only watch movies from our partners, or you can only go to websites from people who paid us money. And that would be a real problem, and that, I think, something that we should really sort of strenuously watch over.
I know Future Radio is an alternative radio station, and we say certain programs and features aren't found elsewhere, but I can just about guarantee there's nothing this detailed or this in-depth about techie stuff anywhere else on the airways, certainly not in Norwich. So, more technical stuff for the city coming up a bit later on, including a tip of the week, low light photography. We'll do that, but first of all, we'll play Killing Joke and Love Like Blood. That's Killing Joke and Love Like Blood on Future Radio 96.9. Still to come today, we are going to talk with Tim Williams from the Evening News. There'll be our job review and job spot from Job Centre Plus. Do that about 20 past 12 today. Tim Williams will be in the studio straight after the 12 o'clock news. And Terry Lee will wake him up, bring him back in here, and he's going to review Family Guy. You like Family Guy, Ross?
Oh, I've not seen this. I've heard so much about it. I'll have to listen into that, definitely.
Okay, superb. Now, you gave your tip to me, Dominic, about photography, how to make better digital pictures.
Yes.
And what I did was I got my digital camera. Uh-huh. I think I put it into the bright light, thinking I get a better picture.
But you went the other way around.
I got it wrong.
What you need to do is you need to use the focus locking, right? So you push the shutter halfway through until the green light comes on, whatever light is on your camera, usually green light. But you need to focus. But let's say your sun is shining into you, into something you want to take a picture of. So usually you get a washed out picture.
Okay.
And so what you want to do is focus and zoom, lock your focus on something that is out of the sun at a similar distance, something that's similar out of the sun, so with the sun behind you. Keep the shutter pushed halfway through. Don't push it out, just lock it. And then turn and push it all the way through when you're aiming at the thing you want to take a picture of with the sun into you.
Oh.
And again, if the sun is directly shining into the lens, there's nothing that can save you. You need a filter and, you know, you need a lot of work. But if the sun is maybe shining through at an angle, or it's just there's too much light, that's a good way to get the camera to think that there isn't as much light and they will focus in the right way. So it will be better. It will not be perfect, but at least you'll get something. Another trick for shooting into the sun is use the flash.
Uh-huh.
If you put the flash on not on manual, not on auto, but on manual, so that it comes on when you tell it. If you actually, because it floods out some of the light, and the camera again will do a better job focusing. So, you know, so you can just kind of do a combination of these. And with the digital camera, it's nice because you can always review what you've done. So that's a good way, you know, so you can see which worked better for you in a particular condition.
How does the red light, the red eye reduction, because it never seems to quite work with me.
No, and it's I never use it. I mean, I don't take pictures of people that much, but the problem is the red light, the red eye happens because your pupils dilate, and then they're letting in too much light, and then there's a reflect in the flash.
Because people you that it's the blood you can see, but that's not true, is it? No. It's just a reflection of your light.
What the red eye reduction does, it actually flashes twice, so that so the flash actually it sort of desensitizes your eyes, so your eyes either contract or expand. I can't remember, but it does something to your eyes. You don't get the red light. But the problem is, very often people think you've already taken the pictures and they start moving. So, you know, so I don't use it. Most software for retouching images online on the computer that you can get will do a good job of getting rid of the red eye. So I wouldn't worry about it on the camera. There's a great little website you can use for online for free to do this. It's called pixinate.com.
Wow.
And you can just upload your pictures and edit them online and download them again.
Pixinate.com.
It's a very, very good little site. And they have a red eye reduction that works pretty well. But, you know, but I think Picasa probably does it as well, or any Urban View, I think, might have a feature for it. Or if it doesn't, something else will. I mean, there's anything, you know, most of these programs have that.
How do you keep up to date with all this stuff, Dominic?
Well, I think we'll need to talk about how to do that, because actually it is it's not that difficult, but it takes a bit of effort. You were asking Ross, you know, what are the websites he goes to? Well, I just go to one website every day, and that's a Google RSS reader, and that has all my subscriptions to all these other websites. So if something new comes up on one of these other websites, including the BBC, I see it in this one place. So I don't have to sort of remember, oh, you know, do I need to go there? I haven't been there in a while. What's new? I get all the updates in one place.
So once you've clicked on that story, does that not come up again then?
It doesn't. I've read it, so it remembers what I've read, and it's a very useful thing. This is not the only way to do it, but basically you need to take advantage of something we've mentioned before, with respect to podcasting. It's called the Real Simple Syndication, the RSS. You know, those little orange buttons you see on websites occasionally.
Yeah.
And if you have an RSS reader of some sort, click on them, subscribe to the website, and that way you don't have to go there anymore. It will just always tell you if something's new has come up. And that's a good way of keeping up with things.
So have you learned something there?
I have. I'm going to try that out later on. Yeah.
But I forgot to tell you, I had one more tip for digital photography, because I was in Barcelona. I was walking around. And, of course, in Barcelona, as in Spain, life doesn't really begin until like 9 p.m.
Right.
you have dinner at 11 and then you go out after that. When I lived in Barcelona, I once was in a traffic jam in the middle of the city at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Great.
of course, in Norwich, nothing happens after 5:30. But but it's a very different pace of life. So anyway, so of course you want to take pictures when you walk around at night, and usually if you've tried to take pictures at night, they're awful. Particularly if there's any lights, like windows or anything, because they're always like blurry, or they have these smudges, really nothing on there. Well, the only way you can get the perfect picture taken is you have a good camera and a tripod.
Okay.
But of course, nobody wants to carry a tripod around. Right, because the problem is the technology of the camera is it needs to keep the shutter open for longer to get more light in, right? So basically that's why you get smudges, because there's more time to react to your shaking hands. But here's a tip how to do it without a tripod. And it's a great little tip that I only recently found out about, and is basically set your timer. You know the timer that you have on the camera for taking pictures of yourself. Well, you can use it for taking pictures at night of other things. Just set a timer, focus, push the button, and wait. And the problem is much of the shaking that happens at night happens when you push the button. You don't even think about it, but it actually shakes the camera quite a bit. So if you use a timer, you'll get much better pictures. So that's one trick. The other trick is if you have a so-called continuous... on some of the old cameras, you could just kind of push the button and it takes picture after picture, boom, 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 boom. Many digital cameras will have that feature. So if you have that, use that instead. And take four or five pictures.
You'll have one good one.
And one will be a good one, because, and it works almost every time. I have some great night pictures. Not sort of professional magazine quality grade, but definitely pictures that I can see what it was, as opposed to, when I tried it before and I always got awful pictures without a tripod.
You ought to write a book, perhaps, at some point. Put it on the net. That'd be superb. Good, great stuff as ever, Dominic. Thanks very much for coming in today. One other thing I should just ask you. Uh-huh. What are we going to do next week? You've got some ideas, I believe.
Well, we could talk about lots of things. I mean, we still haven't mentioned the big news that came out this week.
The big news story, Dom.
What was the big tech news story? Any guesses?
I think it was that Google are going bust.
that would be earth-shattering. No. There was a big anniversary about a week and a half ago. The 25th anniversary of the smiley face. But the really big news was Halo 3, this big game from Microsoft that in the first 24 hours sold 170 million worth of games. It's more than any film, any big blockbuster has ever sold in the history of entertainment. So that was the big news. And maybe next week we can talk about some high-def TVs and high-def definition high-def video and how to do some of these things.
If anyone's played it, could they review Halo 3?
If anybody's played it, they can certainly call in
and let us know, do a
review.
futureradio.co.uk. Click on the instant message. Let us know, send us a text, future, then your message. Tell us if you played it or not to 666. And we'll talk about high definition and TV and why people look a bit strange on those screens if you haven't got the right kind of format. And do that again next week. As ever, Dominic, Ross, thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Future Radio 96.9 FM podcast. To listen live or find out more about Future Radio, visit our website at futureradio.co.uk.